Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Blazers Edge podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Dan Morang. And as always, I should remind everybody that we can be found on iTunes, on Stitcher, or anywhere else for your podcast needs. And as always, or almost always, you can find me with my co-host, the managing editor of Blazers Edge, Dave Deckard. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm a little more settled than last week and anticipating keenly the start of the season. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. I mean, we're rolling into what is the best time of year for sports for me, and we're starting to get a little bit closer and still doing those day-by-day counts, and now we're starting to get little tidbits from training camp, and now we've got the world beater, Greg Steensma, has been signed to a training camp roster for the Blazers, so we're starting to see some of the training camp spots being filled out and the roster being pushed up as training camp starts to roll out. How are you feeling about as we head into this?
Yeah, Steensma, on the target list of Trailblazers fans everywhere. another live body center. I mean, he could block shots, play a little defense. He's not a lock to make the roster, but he's kind of an insurance policy to the insurance policy. It's one of those things where, okay, well, you know, you have a life insurance policy already, but you're feeling nervous when you get on the plane. So you fill out one of those extra forms and drop it in the box where you paid $5. And if the plane crashes, they'll give you $2 million, which you're survivors anyway. That's about what Steensma is. He's that airport insurance policy. He won't hurt anything. If he played much, there's probably a problem. But hey, you know, a few block shots, you never know, could come in handy.
But by insurance policy, I'm almost assuredly you're not actually pointing to the actual insurance policy they took out on Festus Ezeli's knees, right?
No, not at all. This has nothing to do with Festus Ezeli, except that if Festus doesn't show up, I guess Steensma gets a call and backs up Mason Plumlee and Myers Leonard and Ed Davis and whoever else fills in the center position.
When I see Steensma, I think of two different sports. I think of hockey and I think of football. Football-wise, I think of him as the guy that they bring it in to stir it up and start some fights in training camp. And kind of the same aspect, I see it as a kind of an NHL enforcer. Yeah, he brings some defense and he brings some hustle and some block shots, but I see him more as a tough guy. And I've kind of alluded to that in the past, that the Blazers are kind of missing that tough guy. So I think that maybe they're bringing him in, and he may take up that bench role that Chris Kamen was taking if he does make the roster, probably not see the court, but bring an attitude and a toughness to the team that I think's been lacking.
So Steensma is the goon, huh? Well, besides, he has that one quality that no Trailblazer team can be without, which is the ability to screw up your spell checker, something awful.
I mean, he's the guy, you know. I mean, he's slapshot. He put me in, coach. I got the foil. I mean, that's what I see when I see Steensma.
You know, well, you know, if you can't get Joel Prisbilla, I guess Steensma will do.
And he will butcher some autocorrects. That is for darn sure.
Okay. Hey, I had someone once just write me a really angry email about how I misspelled Joel Prisbilla's name. And it was absolutely 100% correctly spelled. It's just this is the Trailblazers. They like guys with three or four syllables and multiple consonants jammed together. So anyway, what's on the agenda today?
All right, so we're looking at the Trailblazers roster. We've got what looks like is going to be the training camp roster as we get ready to open up camp here in a few weeks. And let's take a look at and break down each player that we have currently on the roster and what is a realistic expectation for growth for each one of these players? And as we get further down the line, what's the one thing, if you had a magic wand, you could gift one of these guys? What trait, what attribute, what skill, what physical growth, what mental growth, what would you gift any one of these, or every one of these individual players that are currently on the roster? And I know you've got one that you want to lead off with.
Do I? It's your favorite guy, Mason Plumlee, and I got my magic wand ready, but as far as like a realistic improvement that he could make, I got to let you lead off on this. What do you see Mace doing that could improve his game that's within reach?
I know a lot of people want him to develop a 15-foot jumper. That's not realistic. I've seen some people point to his free throw percentage. If you've never cracked 70% from the free throw line, ever. Realistically, expecting somebody to all of a sudden develop a reliable jumper from 12 to 15 feet is not going to happen. So to me, I'm going to go further inside, finishing inside. Mason Plumlee is a very athletic, strong, dynamic athlete. But because of his physical shortcomings, he falls short finishing inside. If you're that big, that strong, that athletic, shooting 60% inside should not be a difficult feat. But somehow he comes up very short time and time again. So I'd like to see him up that to at least 58% finishing inside. And I think that's a realistic expectation. If he gets the 60 or above, great. But I think 58% is a nice cutoff line for him.
Inside being defined as 5 feet and in or so?
Yep.
Yeah. I hear you. You took away my magic wand since you said I can't now give him free throws. that's what I was going to give him. So
I mean, if your magic wand, you could give it to him. But I mean, realistic, I just don't think it's something that can happen.
Sure, you stole my thunder, though, by mentioning it. So instead, I'll wave my wand for you, Mason, and wish wide open lanes in front of you, either with or without the ball. So a feast of alley-ooping or straight lines to the rim where he can show off that dunk contest form. Because he can finish when the floor is open in front of him. It's just that when he gets in traffic, you don't see much from him.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of going to go along the same line. If I could just wave a magic wand, I'd make his arm 7 inches longer.
Oh, yeah. See, there you go.
Just give him the wingspan. Just give him the wingspan. That's physically, that's all the guy needs. Because you saw how much he was bothered by a guy like Draymond Green, who has this freakish wingspan in the playoffs. You see guys that are the same height but have a longer wingspan who really bother him. These guys are shorter but with a longer wingspan that bother him. If you gave him the arms that went with that frame, that body, that size, I think you'd see a huge increase on both sides of the ball. Defensively, I think he'd be a great shot blocker. Offensively, I think he'd finish better inside. I mean, if you were going to wave a magic wand on any singular player on this team, and you could only gift one person, I mean, he'd have to be a candidate for that.
Perhaps. I've got another one down the line, but let's move on to Damian Lillard. What realistically would you like to see him improve on?
Realistically, his efficiency. And that's, I think, something that's going to come with – everybody kind of wants to debate the efficiency with Lillard. Because his effective field goal percentage and his true shooting percentage is buoyed by how many threes he takes and makes, people want to say, well, he's effective in this sense. He can be effective and more efficient by taking better shots. I've often said that if Damian Lillard gets an in-range or a comfortable set shot that he can step into or a pull-up shot that he can just take right away early in the game and he knocks it down and he gets his rhythm, he goes. He goes all night long. But when he takes these one dribble pull up, hesitation pull up, step back fadeaways early in the game, you usually see him struggle early on. So I'd like to see him change his shot taking, his mindset. Be aggressive, but be aggressive in the right points early on. And I think that'll increase his efficiency. What are you leaning towards?
I'm okay with all of his offensive foibles and glories. I'm good with that in terms of all the points he scores and the shots he takes. That's his role for me. I would like to see Damian create one front court offensive player with his passing. And I don't care which target it is. But I know the front court guys are limited. I understand this. At the same time, he is going to draw enough attention that with a reasonable amount of passing ability and an eye for the passing lane, he should be able to make somebody like Plumlee or, you know, I don't know, maybe even Davis. He should be able to find them dunks at the rim. And I don't see that happening much now. And it's not going to happen one-on-one with these front court players. So I'm going to put it on Dame to up somebody else's scoring average, and I don't care who it is.
You know, this is a great one for me because I've often derided Lillard for his inability to throw a lob pass. Portland, over the last decade, 15 years, has had some of the best lob passers in NBA history. Andre Miller, Rod Strickland, Steve Blake. Blake could throw lobs on a dime just perfectly, and it was amazing. And I think it was an underappreciated asset that Portland got so used to having for so many years. for all of Lillard's offensive gifts and blessings, he's a gifted passer, but I don't think you see him use it enough in that sense. And I think that would be a huge area of growth to get not only those guys going and free him up, but get easy points. Now, if we're looking magic wand, I think everybody knows which way I'm going to go with this.
Probably me too. What's yours?
It's defense.
Yes, it's defense.
It has to be defense. And one particular thing, the pick and roll game. I wouldn't even make it would seem too easy to say just make him an all-world defender. No, just let him understand how to navigate the pick and roll defense. If he did that, he'd be a plus defender.
I want all-world defense. I want Avery Bradley. I want to transplant Avery Bradley's defense into Damian Lillard's game. And at that point, I think the Blazers would have a much more legitimate shot at a title over the next 6 or 7 years than they do right now. And if I had a magic wand, that, you know, I was thinking of a different one, but that may be the one thing that I would do. I suppose you could invert it and give somebody like Plumlee an awesome offensive game. So you could do it that way. But I think, if even one of these backcourt players was a super strong defender, that the Blazers' fortunes would look way up. And speaking of backcourt players, how about CJ McCollum, Lillard's backcourt mate? What do you want to see realistically from him?
I think CJ's growth curve has shown that, and we kind of alluded to this last week, is that for me, the realistic expectations hinge on his ability to take those already good and great gifts and harnessing them just a little bit more. He's got so many dribble moves and escape moves and creativity on the offensive end and he's already incredibly efficient from everywhere on the floor. So for me, it's about making better choices and creating for others. We saw him when Lillard went down for those 7 games play the primary point guard role and excelled. So he has that natural ability to create and play make and be the primary facilitator. I'd like to see him do that again, kind of going back to what you said, creating for others. We know how good CJ and Dame are offensively and the gravity that they have on the floor. So being able to expand their games and get everybody else involved and freeing themselves up, I think is huge and probably something that we'll look to seeing going forward.
Yeah, same thing for me. Point guardiness, a little bit more floor mastery. But you know what? I was just thinking that back in the Travis Outlaw days, Jared Bayless and what have you, when we were speculating a lot about potential, I generally said takes about 5 years. But by the end of the fifth season, you already know what a player is going to be like, more or less. But in the fifth season or so, it gets cast into stone and you know the player that you've got. Well, Lillard will complete his fifth season this year. McCollum is a year behind him. So I think that this is, it's not going to be a key growth year for Damian, I don't think. But this will be the year in which I think the clay gets hardened. And I hope it gets hardened a little bit in terms of that all-round game for actually both of these players, because we're nearing the end of the point where you expect to see new things develop.
Yeah, you aren't going to see these guys like the Lillard and McCollum aren't going to do the Wes Matthews, Jimmy Butler type growth where they all of a sudden...
We did that last week.
Yeah, late bloomer where all of a sudden a skill set pops up out of nowhere that just blows you away. So I think, again, we're talking more refinements when we're talking about these two guys. Now, Magic Wand-wise, which way are you going? Are you leaning towards defense with McCollum, or are you going another way?
No, I want to grow him a little bit. I want to make him like 6'6" and long arms, because I think that could make up actually for a lot. So I want him to keep his agility, mind you, and his all-around scoring ability. He's the guy that I'd give a little bit longer arms and a little bit more height to, maybe a little bit more bulk too.
So you make
you
him
have
Brandon
some
Roy.
Contrast. Yeah, Brandon Roy's actually a good analogy. You know, I was thinking maybe even a little bit more power than that if I had a magic wand. But, you know, no, that would work.
No, I can definitely go with that. Magic wand-wise, I don't know which way I would go with CJ. I think the obvious answer is defense, but I think you're on to something. If he were a Klay Thompson size or a Brandon Roy size, I don't think we'd hear so much about the defensive discussion, because you'd have the size on the floor to move with guys, to be interchangeable on the defensive end. And even at CJ's defensive level right now, I think if he were a little bit bigger, we probably wouldn't begrudge it so much. I think the size thing does magnify that issue a bit. So I don't want to steal your answer, but I think that's a good way to go with it.
And it's a good point about defense. I think that people miss is that there are two points. There are some people who can't close on defense because they're just too slow. And McCollum definitely doesn't fit into that category. But close and do what? And we saw this with Myers Leonard for a couple years, at least, that he actually could kind of get to a spot, but it didn't matter when he got there because he couldn't do anything. Now he's different than CJ in that he didn't have the size disadvantage. But you know, it's not like McCollum's small either. I'm not saying he's a tiny guard, but those extra inches would allow him to be more effective on the perimeter when he did close. And I think that would be a big deal. Now, how about one of your favorites, Noah Vonleh?
Realistic, making it into the rotation.
Yeah, anything.
I mean, that's as high as I see him going. Watching him in summer league, to say I was disappointed is probably an understatement. I expect, and people look at the stats and say, well, he averages double-double. I'm like, the competition in summer league is not NBA level competition. It's nowhere even close. I expected Vonleh to go in there and dominate on both ends of the floor, offensively, defensively, rebounding. And for long spurts against subpar competition, he just didn't perform. So I've definitely, any real hopes I had in Noah Vonleh were stifled a bit at that point in time. So I, for me, realistic is getting on the floor and just showing that you belong.
A move for me, especially with his, I think with his back to the basket or starting with his back. I don't care if he spins and finishes. I don't care if he takes a couple dribbles. I just need a bankable move that he looks comfortable with, that he can score reliably with, even one, and I will pin some hope on him. How about Magic Wand?
Magic Wand, killer instinct. He has all the physical tools. He has all the tools in the world, but I just don't see, you see these flashes. Last year, speaking of moves that you could go to, he had a drop step spin move that I saw him put on somebody, and he looked like David Robinson in his prime. It was unbelievable. My jaw was on the floor. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a huge fan of the feet work from the big men. And when I saw that, I went, wow, this kid, and I think it was like the sixth or seventh game of the season. I was like, man, I watched him in Indiana and I never really saw those flashes. And now when I saw that, I'm like, maybe there's some real hope for this guy. But when he's out there, it's a lot like Myers was, any young big man in the league. They're a step or two behind, and then when they are, they don't commit to anything. And I'd like to just see him be more decisive and more committal towards anything and everything.
Yeah, I think my magic wand with Noah Vonleh is a bankable move. I mean, that's it's the same as my real. Maybe he can reach that potential. The bar seems low.
So you're going to gift him with a dream shake?
Yes, he was just so far from that last year, even in his best moments, because his really good moves stood out for their rarity. So look, you know, Noah's at the point where it's like anything you take, you're going to be really happy with. How about Al-Farouq Aminu?
Realistic growth, I think, is going to be an easy one to spot, and that's just being more efficient with the ball. Anybody who watched last year knows that Al-Farouq in transition was a complete and utter disaster. I don't like being that blunt about it, but it was bad. He had, I think, at last check, he had more unforced turnovers in the open court than any player in the NBA. So that's not a good sign.
Right, and it wasn't much better when he put the ball on the floor anywhere, really.
Yeah, so
I mean, we had to go Magic Wand. I'll go Magic Wand already. Something off the dribble.
Being able to put the ball on the floor without putting it off your own foot, that would be huge. Yeah, yeah, no, that's exactly the way I'd go with it, is being able to not even just create off the bounce, but be capable enough off the bounce that defenses had to honor you. And I think the Blazers, outside of Turner, McCollum, and Lillard, are definitely, there's a void there. Harkless isn't a guy that can put the ball on the floor from 15, 18 feet out. He can hit a back cut, same with Aminu, but none of those guys can put the ball on the floor one-on-one and create on their own. There's three guys on this roster that can do that, and beyond that, that's probably a stretch.
Now, realistically, for Aminu, I want another 10 points on the three-point shooting. He's at 36% last year, which was by far a career high. I would love 37. If he gives me 37, I think I can overlook a lot of stuff, because that's actually a good number.
That's the cutoff number, really. I mean, if 37% or better, you're a perceived threat by opposing game plans.
And you can forgive a lot of stuff if a guy can do that. So I think that alone, and he's open. He's been in the latter part of the season, he was left more open than any legitimate 3-point threat on the Blazers since Raymond Felton was here. And there is a reason for that. And I think, if he can get just one more tick, I hope he's working on it. I assume he is, because that's his key to freedom. That's his key to get to take the car out for a spin.
Yeah, Magic wand wise, I'm gonna stick with being able to put the ball on the floor, just because the Blazers are lacking a little bit of creativity from that spot. So
we did Magic wand first on Aminu. It's okay. So Ed Davis. I mean, I have a hard time picking anything with Ed. I like him. I mean, realistically, I know he wanted to put on some bulk. I guess that's okay. Maybe a little stouter defense in the lane, being able to throw his weight around a little bit, be a little more of a stopper at the rim, could be a realistic improvement, especially if he gets to play some center.
See, for me, I would have gone the other way. It was actually surprising to me when Ed said he wanted to put on the weight. I thought maybe getting a little bit smaller, a little bit quicker, mm-hmm. would have been more helpful for him. And this is kind of going into something that I'll be putting out later this week, is him at the four paired with a guy like Myers Leonard, to me, seems like a great pairing. If Davis can be a Tristan Thompson light, if he can guard out at 18 feet, 20 feet, I'm not asking him to chase Steph Curry around the three-point line like Thompson did in the finals. That's asking an awful lot of a guy that big. But enough to where a guy like Thad Young can't consistently abuse him at the stretch four position over and over and over again, that to me would have been huge. But since he is trying to get bigger, the realistic expectation for me is that Ed is going to give you 8 and 8, because that's what Ed Davis does. That's the role he fills, that's the role he's going to fill, and that's what he's going to do. So he's already effective offensively. Defensively, he's a great defensive rebounder. He's a great weak-side shot blocker. So realistically, I expect Ed to be Ed.
Yeah. Magic wand-wise, I mean, I guess a lot of hops to use shot blocking and help shot blocking on the defensive end. I mean, not that he doesn't have some already, but, it would be cool. He does have some mobility, especially for a guy who plays the style he does. And it would just be cool if he had just a little more intimidation ability, so that people flinched when they came in the lane and he had that extra tick to get his arms out there and swat away some shots. Because I think that could be a real cool wrinkle to his game.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because we've talked about before how while the Blazers performed okay inside the paint in certain times, the intimidation factor has never really been there. I mean, the last guy who was really intimidating was probably Prisbilla, maybe Odin to an extent. But
Odin was a monster. Yeah, I mean, people forget that. When he was healthy, he was just like erasing stuff in there.
I remember him tossing Ray Allen in the third row of the stands in the Garden, and my jaw hit the floor, and I went, oh, okay, that's the kind of guy Greg's going to be. Perfect.
Well, and everybody forgets, I've mentioned it a couple times before over the years, that when he came up against Noah, not Noah Vonleh, Joakim Noah, right? He made Noah look like a kid. I mean, Noah
pedestrian.
Was a kid at that point, but he just obliterated him. And it's like, and Noah turned out to be one of the best defensive players in the NBA, by the way. So it's like, oh my gosh, what was there? But anyway, we got distracted here. What were we talking about before we went into Odinland? Oh yeah, Ed Davis's magic wand.
Magic wand wise, it kind of goes where I was leaning earlier. I'd give him a little bit quicker feet. If he could cover out like Tristan Thompson does, I think that would be phenomenal. Like to marry the two aspects of the the perimeter defense against a stretch four or your traditional power forward and the interior defense rebounding and inside finishing would be huge. And that would be a boon for the Blazers.
You know, what's really funny is because Ed Davis seems to me like the old man on the team, and he kind of is. I mean, he's among the most experienced, but that amounts to he's entering his seventh season, which, by the way, ties him for the longest tenure in the league of anybody on the Blazers this year. Yeah, that's the tops.
That's crazy. That's how young this team still is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm looking at Basketball Reference at the years of experience, and it's reading 3-4-3-2-2-6-6-1-1-6-3 rookie 4-3-4 rookie 1. I mean, it's like a password where you only used the left four numerical keys. So it's like that is pretty amazing. And I, you know, these guys do have some time to grow together, provided the finances work out and the patience works out. But to think that if this team stayed together in four seasons, they just then have some people completing their 10th year of experience is pretty amazing.
All right, who we got next?
Evan Turner has not played with the team, but obviously he's been around for a few years. What would you like him to realistically improve?
Realistically improve his shot taking. In Boston, he fancied himself a shooter from the mid-range and from the three-point line, and that's just not. So I'd like to see him turn up that shot-taking acumen a bit. You got to take the shots the defense gives you. I understand that. But there's some times when their defense is sagging off you so far above the break three, there's a reason why they're sagging off you that far on the above the break three. Stop taking those. So that to me would be the big thing. And then as far as statistically, what I expect from him is probably anywhere in the range of 10, 5, and 5. So realistically, expectation wise, anything above that is great.
Realistically, I'll take a corner three. I'll just take a consistent corner 3-point
the
jumper.
Stot special.
I'm not going to ask for anything more. I'm not going to ask for good overall 3-point shooting. I'm not going to ask for miracles. Just want that corner three to fall often enough to make players respect him.
That's a pretty decent one. Magic wand wise, I mean, it kind of goes with what you're saying. If you're going to gift him with anything, I wouldn't necessarily gift him the 3-point shot. I'd gift him that mid-range shot that he loves so much. If it's something you're going to go to all the time, be good at it, be elite at it. And I think that's a nice little wrinkle that Gerald Henderson brought to the team last year as well, in that the ability to create off the bounce can be married really well with that mid-range jumper.
Yeah, for me, I'd still go with the three because, you know, Turner is the prototype. He's everything, the combination of all the other things that we've wished for the other guards, right?
And yeah, he's 6'7". He's got a wingspan. He can put the ball on the floor. He's athletic. He's just missing that.
Reasonably good defender. I mean, you know, comparatively anyway. So, like, yeah, exactly. If he had a 3-point shot, he'd be the guy. Problem is, if he had a 3-point shot, you probably couldn't have gotten
him. $25 million a year.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see. How about his buddy Alan Crabb?
Alan Crabb is, to me, going to be the most interesting storyline coming into the season as far as expectation of growth. He got that huge contract. With that comes the weight of the expectations. Some people say, well, he had to pay that to keep him, and you know, you had competitors in the market and all this other stuff, but you're still coming into your second contract when you're supposed to earn the money that you're getting. Early on in life, your second round pick, first round pick, whatever it is, you're given that learning curve. You're allowed to make mistakes and to grow into your role unless you're a top three, top five pick. And Crabb's done that. So realistically, expectation-wise, what I'd like to see from him, and it's something we've discussed before, is his ability to create off the bounce. And if you, like I've mentioned before, if you've watched his workout videos or anything like that, that appears to be what he's going after. So if he can create off the bounce one, two dribble moves that he can create space and knock down shots, as we've talked about how great of a knockdown shooter he is, then perfect.
If I think Alan Crabb, I like almost everything about his game. And the things I don't like about his game, you know, I agree with you basically that moves off the dribble or a shot off the dribble is the answer. But realistically, the stuff that I don't like about his game, he's going to have a hard time improving. So I'm going to go with taken up the hair game even one more notch, because he was pretty impressive last year. It did get a little bit predictable near the end. I want to see a new Alan Crabb do every month, and I want it to be just fabulous, because the guy knows what he's doing in that department, and it's time to step up, young fella. How about magic wand-wise?
Magic wand-wise, I'd turn him into an elite perimeter defender.
Oh, yeah. You
that,
and me both.
That, as much as CJ and Damian, we talk about that, if you had a guy like Crabb, because people don't often understand or respect how ridiculous AC's wingspan is. I mean, he has got freakishly long arms, and he can get... I've done a couple video clips on him. How often he generates tips on errant passes or loose passes, and he can pick pockets because he can reach around the backside and poke it through. He's got great defensive instincts, but I think part of it is the defensive scheme being so conservative, and part of it is lack of experience of being that guy defensively. Like a guy like Tony Allen, he cut his teeth on being a defensive player. Alan Crabb cut his teeth on being an offensive player. So he's learning the tricks of the trade on the other side of the ball. So if you could turn him into a guy that was that elite perimeter defender, you would solve a lot of issues with this Portland team.
Yeah, way easier to turn an elite defensive player into a reasonable scorer than a really good offensive player into a reasonable defender. Because... Yep. It's instinctual. I mean, you've been playing offense every day of your life since you picked up a ball, because nobody gets a basketball for their eighth birthday and then goes out to their hoop in their driveway and practices defensive stances.
Tony Allen might have.
Yeah, might have. Also, you get paid for offense, so there's less incentive to up the defensive game. You don't get paid quite the same for defense, and you know if you can start to score too, your paycheck's going to double or triple. That's pretty powerful. But, you know, Crabb, magic wand-wise, if he was a great defender, he could make Evan Turner expendable. He might even make Aminu expendable and Harkless expendable. You got trade packages there that you could start to work with, maybe. In any case, you'd have a really, really solid rotation. So, you know, hey, that might not be the worst use of the magic wand there. Maybe even better than Lillard, McCollum, and Plumlee in some ways. How about your guy, Myers Leonard? Realistically, what would you like to see?
Well, see, you kind of stole my thunder here, because Myers' hair game looks like it's going to be stepped up.
Well, yeah, but you know what? It's not crab-like. It's
Don't knock the golden locks, man. Don't.
Okay. It's like Opelio Crab next to King Crab. All right. It's okay. It's crab-like. You'll take it if you can't get the other. But once you see those King Crab legs or locks in this case, you don't want to go with the smaller.
Even if Myers throws it in the man bun and he throws it up and muns it.
Oh, I mean, my gosh, man. No man buns. First of all, Noah did it already. Second of all, man buns is just two words that don't go together right. So, Myers just, yeah.
Expectation-wise for me, what I expect from Myers, in all honesty, is to be healthy and establish himself as a NBA player. We've talked about the potential so much, and he does have a ton of it. He's got the size. He's got a great skill set. He's got pretty much everything. If you were looking up prototype for today's NBA, he checks a lot of boxes. So for me, it's about being healthy and inserting himself into the team and into the system. And if those things happen, then I think everything's gravy from there.
Realistically, get your shooting percentages back up. I mean, they took a dive, and I know he shot almost 38% from 3-point land, which is fine. I mean, for Evan Turner, that would be fantastic. For Al-Farouq Aminu, that would be fantastic. But Myers Leonard is supposed to be at another level. That's his calling card. You got to get that up. Got to get that 45% from the field up, back closer to 50. He seems to be on again, off again, you know, one year to the next. It's time for him to be on again, and I expect to see it.
Magic wand-wise, which way are you going with Myers?
Myers, I hate to say it, and I hope he doesn't take it personally, and how can he help it? It'd probably block me along with the other billion people he's blocked on Twitter. But look, some kind of hard-nosed legitimate hard-nosed attitude, like professional, tough. I am here to do a job, and I'm going to do it come hell or high water. And I don't mean like the forearm shivers and shoves and picking on the opposing point guard and occasionally losing it and looking like, you know, a killer bunny rabbit gone wild. I mean legitimate threat, legitimate toughness.
I just kind of chuckled because I just pictured Myers Leonard with giant bunny rabbit ears.
It's what he looks like. He looks like the guy who decided he was going to be tough. And then just didn't, he's kind of doing the thing, but the thing isn't there. The intimidation factor just isn't there.
For me, the magic wand would just be realizing all the potential. Mm-hmm. All the tools that he has, all the gifts that he has, putting it all together. If that man put it all together, he would be a phenomenal player.
Now my view of Myers is he's going to be in the league forever because he's going to be one of those guys who always does a reasonably good job. And as he matures, as he gets into his 8th, 9th, 10th, 12th seasons, he's going to be smart enough and have enough reps under his belt to where he's going to be really nice for you. I mean, he won't be as dominant, I don't think, as a Cliff Robinson will, but I expect his career arc to kind of take that same kind of shape where he ages really quite well.
He's not relying on anything that's out of this world to me.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what you're going towards. And for me, the thing that I've always really liked about Myers is his floor was never really that low.
Right.
His floor was always quite high, especially once he added the three-point shot. Because if you've got a guy that's that, I mean, you want to realize the potential and everything great about Myers Leonard, you can look at two games against Memphis in the playoffs and see the impact that he had. He shut down a center in Marc Gasol, who was probably peak Marc Gasol at that time. Bodied him, banged him, pushed him around, dominated the paint against him like no kid I've seen in quite some time, and then came out and knocked down three after three after three, and that's a really, really difficult thing for an opposing team to handle. So his floor, his baseline for an NBA career, if he's just able to give you that, knock down a couple threes and control the paint for 12 minutes a night for 15 years, yeah, he's a guy that could stay in the league forever. But there's still, and I think that's part of the frustration, is people know that that's the floor, that that's the baseline, that there's so much more that he could give you.
Yeah, so you got to be 20 minutes a night, though. Can't be just 12. But, you know, and I believe he could do that. I believe he could do that pretty easily. And the question has always been, will he? Is that kind of desire / mental synapse firing / will? And not just will for him to do well, but ability to impose his will on the opponent. Because at the end of the day, that's really what this is about. Everybody in the NBA can play well. That's why they are there. Which ones can play well under adversity? Which ones can look at an opponent and say, it is not your night tonight because I'm taking it from you? Those moments have been few and far between for Myers. What I was going to ask you is, do you think he will ever have a season where he just puts it all together, even one season, and becomes like that guy that everybody dreams about?
Yeah. And probably people call me, you know, blind or say that, you know, I'm a Myers fanboy or whatever. But there's something about that kid that I've always admired. If you know anything about his backstory and where he came from and what he went through as a kid and where he is now, you know that the work ethic's there. You know that, I mean, you look at him, just physically, you look at him.
Right.
You can tell the amount of work that you don't get that big, that built, that cut without putting in a ton of work on your body. So I see that, and I mean, coming out of college, they projected him as Tiago Splitter. To flip the paradigm completely and go, hey, you know what, by the way, I also knocked down threes. That takes some pretty big cojones to go to your coaching staff and say, hey, I can do this. I'm going to do this. So those kind of things, those traits, they perkle up, and that's what leads me to think that he's going to put it together. And I just see it, and I think how easy it would be for him to go get 15 points and 8 boards a night and make it look simple and make everything around him so much easier for his teammates. And I think that's where I constantly go back to when people ask me, why do you believe in Myers? What is it that makes you see it? Those are the things that I go back to. And I think if he puts it all together, and I think he can put it all together, and people think, well, 15 and 8, that's nothing crazy. But 15 and 8 in the right system at the right time, doing the right things and opening things up offensively and protecting the paint defensively, there are very, very, very few players in NBA history who could do those two things.
You knew there was going to be at least one Dan Morang rant for podcast, folks. And you knew the smart money was it's going to be about Myers, right? Yeah, question for you now. Player you most want to see 3 years from now, like, you know, crystal ball, you can look ahead and watch them play 3 years from now. Is that Plumlee, Lillard, McCollum, Crabbe, or Leonard?
It's a toss-up between McCollum and Leonard. Leonard to see if he actualized and put it all together. McCollum, because I think McCollum, if I don't think the Blazers will do it now. I think they've invested in him too much. But I think McCollum on his own team, running his own team, would be a superstar in this league. And that's something I've said before. I don't think it's out of the question for CJ running his own team to be a 28.7 assist, 5 rebound guy. I don't think that's a difficult thing for me to project him to be on his own team.
Yeah, you know, we're not given to wild optimism around here, but I mean, there's an argument to be made that even sporting McCollum and Leonard alone on your team would give you some hope for the future, maybe not title aspirations.
Both those guys at their peak would be incredible.
Yeah, could be. I mean, you could look back on this lineup 5 years from now and say, you know, there was some real legit potential on that team. Now, whether they keep it together, whether they can all fulfill that potential in that span on the same team remains to be seen. But you can see where that argument is. And I think CJ and Myers are at the heart of it. Now, Festus Ezeli, I'm not sure that we have a reasonable, I mean, I think the reasonable improvement, the magic wand, the everything is just be healthy.
You know, when you were out, I had Taylor Danforth come in and sit in for 1 week, and mm-hmm. Taylor and I have discussed a lot of things, and there's a lot of things we agree on. There's a few things we disagree on, and the one he blew me away with when I said, what's the over under on Festus Ezeli playing games this season? And he said 20 games, and I laughed, like, come on, man, that's just ridiculous. 2 days later, Festus Ezeli undergoes knee procedure, and I was like, oh my god, 20 games might be right. So, for me, realistically, getting on the court and being healthy, and if you want me to go straight into Magic Wand, give him me good knees. I mean, I could do that for a lot of former Blazers, but man, I understand he got the I failed the MRI contract, but give us at least into the preseason, man.
Okay, let's put Ezeli in. Let's have him take a number, though. I mean, he has to be behind Oden, Sabonis, Roy. Bill Walton's feet, Brandon Roy's knee. Yeah, so, I mean, sorry, basketball gods, on the restore our player list. This is not even, don't do that.
We're not wasting our one on that, on just Ezeli.
Hey, not a Festus. I mean, sure, I'd love to have him, but this time, this place, no. Okay.
Quick question on that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can pick one of the three.
Oh,
Bill Walton's feet, Greg Oden's knees, Brandon Roy's knees. Which one do you take?
That's awful. I mean, I think probably logically I should take Walton's feet because that means more championships. Okay. That's the one you can point to and say is the guaranteed championship. But if you can get Greg Oden right physically and in every other way, you know, there were other problems with Greg Oden, too. But if you can assure me that those aren't going to interfere, then I probably would say Oden, because I think I can spread out those championships then. I believe that Oden could have been the key to a championship team. Now, I think Roy would have had to have been along with him, maybe. But if you could stick Lillard, or let alone Lillard and McCollum, with Greg Oden right now, in Greg Oden's career arc where he would have been, this would be a very scary team right now.
It's kind of crazy when you think about that. Like, those three guys, if you had, I mean, to really answer that question, I mean, it's a tough one to to pick, right?
I mean, how
definitive, how crazy it could go so many different ways.
Yeah. I mean, push me hard and I will say Walton, just because I can up the championship role that way. I mean, that's the name of the game.
I
wasn't that long alive back then, but you know that was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched those games from back then, and you're probably right.
They were going to win it again. They were going to be the first ones to repeat.
But yes, basketball gods, we're not asking for Festus and these if you get the grand.
No.
We're not wasting it.
It was Mo Harkless, the last of the regulars here. Realistic improvement.
Realistic improvement. Huh. We keep going one of two ways, it seems, and it seems to be offensively being more consistent from the three-point shot or defensively being a better overall defender. For me, with Harkless, it's about being consistent, and that being consistent, not necessarily with shot-taking, shot-making, or defensive, consistently on the floor. There were some rumblings about a third of the way into the season that Mo wasn't happy because he didn't know his role on the team. He wasn't getting his chance to play. And then he did, and he'd play well, and then he'd get yanked. And then he'd kind of sulk a little bit, and then he'd come back in, and he'd play well again, and then he'd get yanked. So for me, I'd like to see Maurice Harkless get consistent minutes, and that, to me, that's on him. And if he can do it in camp and he can do it in preseason and show that he's worth at least 20 minutes a night, then I think you'll see Mo Harkless give you what he can give you on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. A lot of things are going to have to happen. And it feels like, okay, it feels like Mo Harkless was, quote unquote, a steal from Orlando. They gave him away for a second round pick that's top 60 protected, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And it felt like that was too good to give up as much as Mo was too good to give up. I believe that Mo could have a place on this team. I believe that Mo is a good player, by the way, and nothing wrong with him. His game is as good as a lot of other current Trailblazers. But that's exactly the problem, is there's not a lot to distinguish him from a lot of other current Trailblazers, many of whom play positions that he would play. So, I mean, I wish for a trade, either Mo or enough people around Mo that he gets a shot. And maybe that's still in the works, okay? Maybe that's part of the rationale behind it, is that we know Mo's not going to play straight up if things go the way the Blazers hope. But if there's a move or two, then Mo slides right in there and gets his shot. I kind of hope for the guy that it happens. I think that he's too young, and he's got too much overall ability to get buried. And, you know, he got a reasonable amount of minutes last year, certainly more than he did the year before. But I think he's a guy who really needs to get out there and find out who he is and be allowed to be that jack of all trades with some athleticism, with a surprise now and then. And I think he'll stick in this league.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where he's not a Jason Terry. And I don't mean skill set wise. I mean, Jason Terry could come in the beginning of a game, end of a game, middle of a game. You could sit him for however long, and he could come in and just play. Mo Harkless is a guy that needs to work himself into a game, get into the flow, get into the groove, grind it out, feel it out, and then kind of impose what he does on a game. And that's really difficult to do when you're in and out of the lineup and in and out of the rotation. So I think you're right in that aspect of let him show what he can do. Let him showcase who he is, what he is, and what he means to a team and in the NBA. If you're going to give me a magic wand, honestly, I just give him one bankable skill set that was elite, whether it be shooting, whether it be defense, generating turnovers, whatever it is. Just give him one that's just so, I don't know, jumps off the page that you can't help but put him on the floor.
Right. And he just doesn't have that yet. But to be fair, he hasn't been given the chance to develop that yet. But to be fair, you aren't usually given the chance to develop that until you've shown that it's there.
No, the now, NBA, it's all about you have to show what you have before you get on the floor. Right. This isn't college where you're a top recruit and you get to work through the pains and aches of a young player. You've got to earn it before you get on the floor.
Right. Unless you're a number one overall pick or something like that. But even then, you've shown enough to where they've seen it.
Tell it to Anthony Bennett.
Yeah, well, okay. There's an exception to every rule. Actually, there are several exceptions. We could go never nervous, Purvis, and all that. But I assume we're going to leave out the training camp fodder, you know, Steamer and Jake Layman, Tim Quarterman, Grant Jarrett. We don't know if they'll make it. Let's take the others in a lump. Shabazz Napier, Luis Montero, Pat Connaughton. Pick any one of those. If you could give one guy one thing of those three, what would it be and who would it be?
Going back to Summer League, this is an easy one for me. Pat Connaughton, being down at Summer League and being right there on the floor, you can hear and see things that you don't get to otherwise. And the way Connaughton was orchestrating the offense and the defense, both ends of the floor, was incredible. I mean, there were times where he was barking at Vonleh and Alexander, guys out of position, guys not doing things right. His overall leadership, he had a little bit of nasty to him. He didn't care who you were or where you were on the pecking order of the Summer League roster. He was going to tell you what you needed to do, when you needed to do it, and how you needed to do it. That was what was going on there. So for me, I'd like to see, and I think that Connaughton could be, he could surpass Napier as the legitimate third point guard. And if you're going to magic wand him, I would basically make him a young Steve Blake. He's got that little bit of floor general in him. He's got that athleticism where it's, I hate to use the term, that sneaky athleticism, but he's got bounce. He's got a little bit of nasty to him. I think of Steve Blake when I see him. A guy that not really heralded coming out of school, but could knock down threes, understood basketball really well, how to space the floor, how to initiate an offense. So if you gave him and he's supposed to have it, a legitimate three-point shot where he was a 39-40% three-point shooter and he could run the offense, I think that to me would be huge for this team, and to have that safety valve.
With me, it would be Luis Montero, and I would just give him
a microphone.
Some bulk and some confidence, because I think this guy, I mean, there's just something about this guy that trips my trigger every time I see him. And if Montero ever gets unleashed, if he ever develops to the point where he can actually see the floor and take advantage of some of his gifts, he's going to be awfully fun to watch. So I would give him a little more size, you know, strength, that kind of thing, and enough chutzpah to get on the floor and watch the fun that happens.
So basically, what you're saying, he's got some Will Barton in him.
Yeah, well, I was thinking more Rudy Fernandez.
I think he
has that mix of stuff. I mean, Rudy was obviously much more polished, much more experienced, much more accomplished and all that. But I think Luis has more than Rudy had potential-wise, right? He just does not have the body, the experience, and all the stuff that goes with it. And I'm not saying that he is a better player than Rudy was or is. I'm saying,
yes, you are, Dave. You're on record as saying it.
Yes. If he does develop into the top echelon of his game, he could be pretty special.
Yeah, no, there's some raw skill, and I understand that the Blazers, they've got, the organization seems to have a little bit of an infatuation with him. And mm-hmm. It's hard not to, because he's 6'8". He's an incredibly smooth athlete. He kind of reminds me of Batum, that Scottie Pippen kind of, where he just kind of flows. The way he moves, and it's something we've discussed in the past, is there's very few guys in professional sports that move like that. They make everything look effortless. And when you see Montero come on the floor and you know, he breaks down the court and pulls up for three and knocks it down, you're kind of like, wait, he can do that? So you see these flashes of brilliance that make you think, hey, maybe someday he could pan out. And I think that's probably what the Blazers are saying. Hey, he's end of the bench. It costs us nothing. You know, let's develop him and see what happens. And you're right. Pure entertainment value when Montero gets on the floor, Montero. Heck, even when he's not on the floor, he's talking trash and asking guys what are those about their shoes. So, you know, he's definitely a fun guy to have around at bare minimum.
Yeah, and when he gets off that pure move, and you somehow, it's a combination of you see it coming, but you don't see it coming. It's like you know what he's going to do, but you don't know that he's going to do it like that. And it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, okay, I want to see some more of you. So anyway, a little man crush on Montero, as they say.
That's right, we're all allowed at least one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and I'm not going to go to the mat for this one. They're players I like more. Okay, so it's all right. You know, it's all right if he makes it. It's all right if he doesn't. But of those guys, I respect what you say about Collins, and I believe it, and I agree with it. But I want to see Montero at full power.
Yeah, no. Montero at peak Montero would be fun. There's no doubt about that. And I think that gets lost in not just in the NBA, but in today's sporting realm. I mean, as we're recording this, the Steelers-Redskins game ended, you know, and it was an ugly game, but Antonio Brown caught, you know, a touchdown pass and in the end zone gave a little twerk. And refs throw a flag on that. I mean, the NFL, I mean, it's the no fun league, but the NBA, they've kind of cramped down on things too. And it's like, I'm glad that there aren't whistles for the three arrow or the three goggles or anything like that. But guys like Montero, I think, make the NBA. They complete it. They're not the whole. They're not the LeBron James and the Steph Currys of the world that everybody's involved in. But I think every market needs a player like that. That somebody is just fun, crazy, brings a level of style that otherwise isn't there or isn't prevalent. So I'm excited to see if he does turn out.
And very good. That's our run through the Trailblazers roster.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of fun that we're getting here because that means we're getting closer to training camp and we're getting closer to actual games happening. So just remember, October 25th, it's not that far away. A little more than a month and a half now. So we're
a couple weeks
up
from now to media day. Yeah. I mean, media day's coming. Yeah, I know, the most overrated, absolutely, the most overrated time of year is media day and preseason. And it's really funny because you're jazzed at first. It's like, oh, look, they're speaking. And then it's like, okay, you can predict what they're going to say and why they're going to say it. And then, oh, preseason games. Okay, after about the third
after
quarter.
After three. It's after three games for me, I'm like, okay, this is enough.
Third quarter of game two, you know, really like, you have more patience than most of us. Like, all right, can we play some real games? Oh, God, 3 weeks till real games.
Honestly, but still, if you're looking at media day, I wish it was treated more like Super Bowl media day, where just anybody and their mom can get in there with press credentials and ask the most asinine, crazy questions you could possibly imagine. I want the random woman in there with her wedding dress asking somebody if they'd marry her. You know, just something just crazy and off the wall to get these guys off their canned answers just to make it more entertaining.
Probably then asking Luis Montero, too. You know,
see, that's where, or, you know, Crabb or Myers. Oh, Myers is married. Never mind.
Myers is married. No,
the hair
Myers
game
is really, really married.
This is very true, but the hair game could be strong, but. Yeah, I get it. You know, we're almost out of the doggest of dog days, and we're coming down the home stretch. And I guess with that, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. And again, just want to remind everybody, if you're looking for us, you can find us on Apple iTunes, you can find us on Stitcher, and you can always find us here on Blazers Edge. And for Dave Deckard, I'm Dan Morang. Just want to say go Blazers, and only a couple more weeks, so let's go.